Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. And this week we're joined by an enduro athlete, different than many of the other podcasts we've done. I think this might be the first one, maybe the second one we've done on the Successful Athletes Podcast with an enduro athlete, but we're joined by Thorn Bickle based out of, I think, are you in Salt Lake City, Utah? Is that right?
Yes. Then? Yes.
Awesome. Thorn rides for Hammer Nutrition, Deity Components, Salt Cycles, which is a great shop out of Salt Lake City. Super cool. And Suspension Syndicate. All of these things very important for all the things that you do to win an enduro race. We're going to talk about balancing not only the fitness side of training, but also the skills and the strength side of training. And we'll talk about your winning of a national championship at Colorado. So cool. Up at Winter Park, Colorado. You won your division in the 50 to 59 age group, and you're 51 years old. So this is also, we're dealing with an athlete that you are not the typical enduro athlete that many people think of, which they tend to be kind of younger athletes that deal with that sport too. So we have so much to cover. But before we do that, Thorn, can you kind of give us some context on what enduro is? Like, what's the race format like? Just, we can start with that, the most basic of basics.
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan. Enduro is it's a really, really fun discipline of mountain biking. So you're basically timed on the fun sections of the trail. you have to get yourself up to the top of the hill, and then enduro is generally gravity based. So your stages are usually, I don't know, probably in the 5 minute to maybe 20 minute length of mostly downhill. And there'll be multiple stages for the day or for the event. And then they add up all of your stage times together, and whose ever time is lowest, that's where you finish for the event. But you do have to get yourself up to the top, and they're pretty generous with the amount of time that you need to get up there. So, you just kind of try to conserve your energy and save it for the racing part of it, the part that you're timed on.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's you take your time within reason. You can't just lollygag all day. And if you have a mechanical, you definitely have to hustle to get your mechanical fixed in between stages.
Yeah.
But it's really all about the descents. Now, when you mention these stages that you're timed on, the descending part, the gravity based part, it's extremely physical though, right? Like, and actually we'll link down below to some videos that we have of me trying an enduro race, the Enduro World Series at North Star, and Richie Rude critiquing all of my lines, which you'll get to see me make terrible choices. But you'll hear my breathing during that. And as what I consider myself to be a fit cyclist, my just rate was entirely through the roof from pedaling, but also just the full body workout. So does it feel like a VO2 effort every time you do a stage? Is it that the sort of intensity?
Absolutely. And that's by design. I mean, if you want to be up towards the front, you're going to be maxed out. And, that's just kind of the way it goes with this sport. It's short though. So you have to kind of be able to know how to push through it. But it is tough. There are, especially on some of the longer ones. Well, earlier this year, I did a race down at Bootleg Canyon, and there was, I think, a 12-minute stage. And, oh, man, that is a long time to be going that hard. And I just remember, I got this, you know, but, boy, that's 12 minutes of VO2 work. Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
It is very physical. And plus, not only is it the pedaling aspect of it, you know, you're using all the other muscle groups. So it's a full body workout because you're going over a lot of rough stuff too at the same time. So you really have to stay sharp. I mean, when you start hitting the wall like that and you're really at your max and your heart rate's way up there, it's easy to make mistakes. So you have to be careful not to push yourself way too hard and then wind up making mental mistakes as a result of that on the technical sections.
And those typically have such high consequences because you're in really extreme terrain. You know,
sure do. Yeah.
The brain fog that comes in with those sort of hard efforts, it has just such high consequences. Where, and certainly in all forms of cycling that exists, but it's heightened with enduro for sure. Yes. So in some cases on races, the race organizer will say, from this transfer, you have to pedal this transfer. And in some cases, it will be you ride a lift up if it's at a resort, or in some cases, they'll even have a shuttle planned. So sometimes you pedal up, sometimes not, right?
Yes.
And in those scenarios, when you're pedaling up, what is your pace in between those stages? Are you ever like thinking, okay, is it just purely about conservation? Or are you thinking of something else and you're going through those transfers to try to pace yourself?
Oh, that's a great question, Jonathan. Yeah. So for me, when I do the transfers, I kind of try to stay in that endurance zone as much as possible and try not to really go over that too much, just to, for energy conservation. And I just try to keep positive thoughts in my head. You know, I love being out there and racing enduro, so that's easy, you know. And one of the cool things about enduro is usually you'll have your competitors riding the transfer with you, and you kind of get to meet the guys, and that's kind of it's cool. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yes. So, yeah, there is kind of almost like a brotherhood with this sport. And I really do like that about the enduro discipline.
That's a cool experience, pretty unique to what we experience on the roadside at the very least. That's the roadside's particularly different there. So let's get into talking about your background a little mm-hmm. bit here. And sure. Let's talk about what in the world caused you. So you got into enduro in 2019 and then thought, I want to go to national championships the next year. That's a really high goal to set. Your goal was to go to national championships in 2020. What was your background like? And then what led you to set such a high goal so early on?
My background, like my historical background?
Yeah, in terms of athletic background. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, it started a long time ago, back in the early 80s. I remember my brother coming home with these BMX magazines. I think BMX Action was, he brought one home, and we were looking at that and we're like, man, that's so cool. So we went out and tried to do some of the stuff in there on our bikes, and we quickly realized that, oh, we need new bikes. So we scrounged up all of our money that we could and got ourselves some BMX bikes and, you know, started doing that and learning the tricks. And he kind of phased out of BMX and I stuck with it. And I really loved BMX and did pretty good with it back there. I remember I went to a race at Starlight BMX in Fairfax, Virginia, and I went there the first time and I won my race. I was like, yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I continued to do BMX a little bit longer. I did that for a few years. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out too good for me. I really wanted to be good at motocross, but I just couldn't get it together for some reason. So I stepped away from that. And I actually wanted to continue racing, because it was just in my blood. I was just like, man, racing is, it just, mm-hmm. it fits the need for me. So, I went out and, discovered stand-up jet skis.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. So I did that for a couple of years and I did okay, you know, and there were some really fast guys in our region. So just an awesome experience racing that. Moving on from there, I did discover mountain biking right around that same timeline when I was kind of phasing out of the jet skiing. One of the guys that I worked with at the shop at the time, he's like, Thorin, you got to come out and mountain bike with us. And I was like, oh man, mountain biking, huh? So I did, he actually had a bike. It was an old Cannondale with that little head shock thing on it.
Yeah.
And, yep. So I bought the bike from him and, the guys at the shop that I worked, with at the time, were really into racing mountain bikes. And so they're like, man, you got to come out and race with us. So I did, I came out and I did a race and, man, I didn't really understand how cycling was so different from motorsports. There's definitely a little bit more etiquette to it, where in racing, for motocross or for jet skiing, you are a lot more aggressive with your moves and everything like that on people, where there's a little bit more etiquette for cross country racing. I didn't really get that. So anyway, I took off from the start on my first mountain bike race and pulled the whole shot and didn't know that I was going to blow up 10 minutes later, but I was doing what I knew how to do. So I wound up crashing and I tacoed my wheel. But anyway, I learned some lessons from that, and I continued to build on that. And I started doing better at cross country, and I was usually, I don't know, I'd finish like towards the front of the field, probably top 10, you know, on average. And I actually, my best doing cross country for mountain biking, I think I finished second, and it was a race. It was called the Massanutten Hoo-Ha that was out there in Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. Yeah. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. There were some big hitters out there. Jeremiah Bishop was out there. So I was pretty stoked to be able to have done. Yeah. Yeah. That guy, of course, he's super fast, but it was awesome to do that one and to get a podium for cross country. So
you're a racer of all things, Thorne. You've done a lot of between motorsports and mountain biking.
Yeah, I have. And it's, man, it's been a journey, and every step of the way has just been incredible. And I'm so thankful to have had the opportunities to do all of these just awesome things. So, and I actually had a reasonable amount of success with all of them, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel blessed really to have the life that I've had. You know, when I look back on it and I think about it, it's like, man, what a journey this has been.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So,
what took you out to Utah from the East Coast, and then it got you to the point where you were, then I guess exposed to enduro in 2019?
Oh man, Jonathan, what a great question. I love it. Yeah. Mountain biking.
That's a ticket to Utah. Makes sense.
Yeah. My wife, she's like, she was having some wine one night, and we were having a discussion, you know, out on the back patio, and she's like, "Hey, what do you think about moving?" I was like, "Yeah, maybe it's time." And so she's like, "Well, I want to move somewhere with mountains." And so I was like, "Ooh, sweet. Yeah, let's do it." And so I started looking, and you know, had discovered Utah. We had never been to Utah before, but the more I looked at it, the more I was like, wow, Utah looks really cool.
Yeah.
And so it just gained momentum, and well, here we are. And I really do feel like this is where I belong. This is definitely home now. I love living in Utah. Yeah, it's an awesome place.
What sort of riding and racing did you do in the years preceding entering enduro? Were you still like racing regularly and doing cross country, or were you more just riding?
I was just riding. I did actually, moving to Utah, I didn't really feel the need to race. I kind of felt like that my needs were being met from just going out and riding, and I've met a bunch of great people, and it's just been awesome. I've just enjoyed it so much. I didn't really feel like I needed the pressures of racing. That being said, I did do the Lotoja Classic in 2008.
Oh, on the road. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? Huh? Yeah. So, my general manager at Lexus, Jim Brown, he had a Lexus team, which I work for Lexus, by the way. I've worked with them since 92, and it's been great. I trained with those guys. They had a team, and there was probably about 12, maybe 15 people on the team. They trained every day. And so that was the kind of closest thing to actual cycle training that I had ever done in my career. The rest of it, I just kind of rode and just kind of wung it, I guess, if that makes sense. So that was my closest thing to structure. And we had a great day on the day of the Lotoja. I felt good. All the preparation was there, fueled right on the day. And I did that time trial. So there's a, we did the fun ride part of it. So we weren't actually racing. I didn't have a license or anything like that. And the biggest thing was just to finish together and just to finish, you know, which by itself is an accomplishment. But there is a King of the Mountain still for that division, which is the third significant climb. I think it's about 1500 feet. And I think about 5 or 6 miles. So and about 100 miles into the 206. So I actually went for it on that climb. I was feeling pretty good. So I pinned it and did my best. And I got second on the KOM on that.
Wow. Way to go.
Thanks. Yeah. I think I was, I think there were about roughly about 800 people or something like that in the category that I was racing. So I felt, yes.
You've always been a very, very, you know, then you've been a high performer, physically speaking, for a long time, likely due to all of this racing you had done and just chasing all of these fun pursuits. But in doing so, you probably just built up a huge amount of aerobic fitness with all the different sports you had done, I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, my numbers aren't crazy, Jonathan. I just, I have a lot of desire. I just love to compete and I like to be competitive. You know what I mean? For some people, they can compete and, you know, just be okay with where they finish. It doesn't really matter to them. I kind of feel like if you're going to compete for me, if I want to compete, I want to be competitive. I want to be a contender. That's just kind of how my DNA is structured.
I can relate with that. Absolutely. Yeah. What caused you to get, interested in an enduro in 2019?
Well, I, in 2018, one of my friends introduced me to Chris and Amy and Jason over at Salt Cycles, and they're a Yeti dealer. And what a great shop. These guys are amazing. Anyway, shout out to those guys. And I got a Yeti 5.5. And when I started riding that bike, I just started notching a lot of top 10s on Strava. And I was like, man, maybe I ought to try racing. So my times were pretty good. I felt pretty good about that. And so I decided to race this midweek mountain bike series, which is a local kind of evening series here that we have. And so I signed up for the Cat One and did my age group, which was 45 plus. I was able to win the series. So I was pumped on that. And so
that set the scene for you going, I want to go to national championships, right?
Yes.
Had you gone for that, that's a, you had raced a lot of different championships at really high levels. So I guess it just makes sense to go to the, in different sports to, in this case, it was like, yeah, okay. I like this. I'm good at this. I want to go to the high level. So you picked the plan or you had the goal of 2020 national championships in Colorado. What was your plan to get nationals ready, you know, to be able to compete at the top level? What were you doing for training at that point?
Well, I was riding as much as I could, as much as my schedule would permit. Here in Utah or Northern Utah anyway, it snows a lot and it gets really cold and I don't really like riding out in the cold all that much. It's just not really my thing. And I had the kicker already, the Wahoo snap. And I had been using that with Brand X for a while. Yeah. So, and while I thought Brand X was pretty cool to go on there and ride with other people and ride with my friends, and they did have some structured workouts that you could do on there, man, it just didn't quite work for me. So then I started looking around to try and find a better way to train. And by the way, you'll love this, Jonathan. I'm a student of Lee McCormick.
Oh, cool. There we go. Yeah. Lee likes bikes. We've recorded various podcasts with him. He's a fantastic skills coach. Yep.
Yeah. He is my sensei. Yeah. Shout out to Lee. Lee, you're awesome.
Yeah.
And he's obviously been part of my program as well. Him and Coach Kevin both are amazing. And my my skills just went through the roof after I met Lee and Kevin. So anyway, I was looking for podcasts with Lee to kind of learn more from him. And I discovered Trainer Road. He was on your podcast. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I was like, well, what is this Trainer Road? You know? And so I started looking into it. And well, the next thing you know, I was signing up for Trainer Road and I got a program together. I did the mid-volume gravity. And I started doing that in December of 2020. December of 2020. And I just continued to build on that.
Let's talk about your starting point there. I'll give everybody kind of like some ideas in terms of the numbers. So granted, every power measurement device or every device is slightly different. And you transitioned throughout the process of training from a kicker core to a standard kicker. Maybe about 20 watts difference is what you were thinking might exist there. So you did your FTP test originally at 247. That was in 2020. And then you got up to the point where with that device, you were up to 305. But then once you switched devices, it knocked you down the peg, 20 watts, which is always tough on the ego. But then again, you're still doing the same amount of work you were doing before. It's just a different number assigned to it.
That's right.
So we can assume that you were probably somewhere around 200 and probably somewhere around 230 watts, right? Give or take somewhere around there when you started. And that puts you roughly somewhere around 2.7, I think, watts per kilogram for where you were at. Cause you were weighing 90 kilograms or about 200 pounds at that time.
Yes.
So that's the starting point. I'll just fast forward to say you eventually got up to the point now where you're at 291 pounds, even though you've had a roller coaster of a year with highs of winning nationals and then also the lows of injuries that you've been fighting. But 291 pounds, you drop down to around 190 pounds or 86 kilograms. So that puts you somewhere around 3.3 to 3.4 watts per kilogram.
Yeah. Yeah. 291 watts. And I was at about 200 pounds and I dropped, I guess about 10 pounds since I started the program. Yeah, thanks. And so
that's a big improvement when we're talking about going from roughly around 2.5 watts per kilogram all the way up to 3.3, 3.4, somewhere around there. That's a substantial improvement. We're almost talking about a third in terms of watt kg that you improved. I want to talk about the training part of things right now. People don't often talk a whole lot about interval training for enduro, even though, boy, it's such a perfect discipline for interval training because its implementation in terms of how you race it, it's just intervals. That's all it is. It's sprint as hard as you can, have limited rest where you're working at a certain level in between the intervals, and then go back at it. And it could be short efforts. It could be long efforts. You have to be able to deal with all of it. So you mentioned that you followed a mid-volume plan. Do you remember which plans you followed in preparation for nationals? Like the exact plans, like were you doing base plans and build plans and even into specialty or what did you follow?
Yeah. So I had races that started early in the year. I did the Bootleg Canyon races. I did two of the three in the series down there. There was one in the middle of February and then the one in the middle of March. And since I started the program in December, it pretty quickly moved me through. So I kind of got a taste of all three right out of the gate within the first 3 months. So it's a little bit different from probably the way that most people would have it structured out over 6 months or a year to where they're peaking out for their races. But mine was pretty short with the 3 months. Yep. But then I kind of went back into a base build after the second race was over there. And I didn't have my next race wasn't until early June. So I had a few months after that to kind of get back on the base and then the build and then
that's
the specialty.
Awesome. Yeah. Plan builder working well for that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Oh man. It's amazing. If you stick to it, you know, that's really the thing.
Sure.
You just have to push through the tough days and just do whatever you can.
Yeah, let's talk about that, the consistency. When you wrote to me, you mentioned the consistency was probably the biggest contributing factor, you know, to getting you to where you were. What did you do to maintain consistency? I believe you're an analyst for Lexus. Is that correct?
No. I'm actually a diagnostic specialist.
Does that mean you're pretty, like you're on your feet and stuff at work?
Yeah. So
how do you manage all that? So you're dealing with the mental and physical toll of work, trying to figure out why a car doesn't work, breaks the brain. So you have all this strain going through your body with work and your mind, and then you have consistent training. When did you train? When did you fit it into your schedule? And then we'll be able to get into talking about all the adjustments you had to make too, if you did have to.
Sure. Well, Jonathan, I just signed up for the program and it had me on a 5 day a week mid volume plan. And so I did Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and then I would be off on Mondays and Fridays, and then Saturday and Sunday. Those were the 5 days of the week that I would ride. Mm-hmm. So I just would do them in the evening. I just come home, you know, maybe get a little bit of something to eat and then jump on there and just go and just do it. And I just committed to it, doing it. And, I was just, you know, there were times when I just had to tell myself, look, I'm doing this to go to nationals. I'm going to do good at nationals. And this is why I'm doing this. And that somehow helped me to work through the tough workouts.
Having a big goal.
Yeah. And, you know, really listening to the podcast helped me a lot with that too. That's a huge part of helping you get through the tough ones. Each one of you there at Trainer Road really does give something a little bit different to help to contribute to finding a way to get through those tough ones, right? You know, like just thinking about Pete saying, well, you know, if you can get through the first one, you can get through the rest of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, well, he can do it.
Yep. You know?
So,
yeah. What sort of work was the toughest for you? Was it sustained, long, or more like sweet spot and threshold work? Or was it extended VO2 work or the off on the really short 30-30s? What was the hardest stuff for you?
That's a good question. Yeah. I think initially my toughest thing was the over-unders. For me, those were really tough. And they take time to kind of build up your tolerance for. I mean, even if you have a high FTP, just being used to that kind of work, it's a little different and it's tough. Yeah. So, the on-offs,
that brings up a really good point. Sorry, really quick. Sorry to interrupt, Thorne, but
yeah,
it's not all about FTP. I mean, we talked about your FTP improvements, but like you said, it's about that level of specificity and that training brings about that sort of fitness. Yeah. So really good insight there.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, as far as I think racecraft is really important too, just, you know, you have to understand the discipline that you're racing. And you have to apply your skills towards it. Like that's really key. Just knowing this is what I'm really good at and then applying that towards what you're trying to accomplish. And if you can put that together and you can have a reasonably good amount of fitness, you can win or you can do really well.
Sure.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
How did you get better at over-unders? Was it just simply doing more of it and then you got better? Was it fueling better? Find any mental tricks for holding on?
Man, I think you just have to embrace the pain.
Yeah.
you do. I mean, it's painful. But you have to have the desire, right? I mean, you have to have a goal. That's the thing. If you're goal-driven, you'll find a way to work your way through it. I mean, they hurt at first, but then you get used to how they feel and you will be able to get through them. I think that is the key. You got to have the carrot out there for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. What sort of work were you best at? Like naturally, where you just felt like, oh, I like these intervals. If I have to have intervals today, these are the ones I want.
Endurance. No, I'm just kidding.
Amazing for an enduro racer. Yeah.
No, I think the on-offs, I feel like I'm the best at the on-offs.
Yeah. And it makes sense with the sort of things you've done your whole life, right? In the sense of BMX to motocross to jet ski racing to all the different things that you've done. Those are very on off sort of efforts that you do throughout the entire activity, however long it may be. Let's talk a little bit about the skills side of things. You mentioned that you'd worked with Lee and he really leveled up your skills, but how much time did you dedicate to building your skills on the bike, your technical riding skills amidst all of the training you were doing?
Well, it's a never-ending journey with technical skills. You know, and the bikes are so good right now. Just as much time as I could. You know, I mean, obviously I committed to doing the 5 to 8 hours a week of trainer road training, which was, you know, at times difficult to get through. But I would try to get out at least 1 or 2 days a week to ride, you know, outdoor just to work on skills. And that didn't always happen. You know, this has been an interesting year for me. I haven't not done as much of that as I would like to have. Mm-hmm. When I kind of started out on this journey this year, I kind of visualized it to be a little bit different. But I've been consistent with the trainer, but I haven't been as consistent with the outdoor rides. I did get a power meter for my bike. I actually got 3 power meters now. It's kind of funny. Those things are addicting. Once you have one, you want another one and
you never want to be without them. Yep.
That's right. Yeah. So, that's a metric there. That's just very valuable for training. So kind of waiting to get the power meter, and then, you know, parts have been really difficult to come by these days. So I kind of limited myself a little bit to the indoor training, which my friends are, Thorn, when are you going to come outside and ride? You
know? Yeah. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Like, but, you're just building fitness. You're just smacking them down is all you're doing. Yeah. You got the skills already in place, right? What about the strength side of things? Do you dedicate any time to strength training?
I do. I have a Ripro that Lee has designed, and that thing works awesome, and it targets very specific muscles and patterns. Another shout out to Lee. The Ripro is amazing. I feel like it's a great tool. And that's really it. I do some stretches and I do some Ripro and I do skill work on the bike.
Awesome. So Nationals 2020 was canceled and you had to deal with kind of like an ebb and flow for a while in terms of whether it would happen or not, leading all the way into 2021. So was that discouraging for you, and how did you manage the psychology of suddenly this big goal that was getting you through all of your hard workouts? Not only was it distance, but it was also, you didn't know if or when it was going to happen. How'd you navigate that mentally?
Well, it was tough. I mean, anybody that was planning on going to Nationals can definitely, kind of relate to that. Because it is a big goal, and you have to put a lot of effort into getting yourself prepared for doing that. And so, when they canceled it, it was kind of like, oh man, you know, but then I did have some other kind of local events that I was able to do, thankfully, through the whole, you know, first year of COVID, and that helped. Man, it was tough. Yeah. But you know, you just have to accept it. It's out of your control. And just go, well, it wasn't meant to be. So I just need to keep on my program. I'll just have to put it on hold till next year, keep working at it. Hopefully next year they'll have it. And if they do, awesome, we're going. If not, then, well, again, out of my control.
So do you still have that carrot for those hard days? Was Nationals still the carrot for you? Did you have to find a substitute motivation, so to speak?
Yeah. Nationals was kind of out of the picture at that point. I mean, after they said that they weren't going to have it, I just started focusing on my other events and
got it.
And just going out and having some fun rides and just, you know, making the most of it.
A much needed reset for you too, to be able to do that. When you carry on, you extend something that was supposed to be, you know, 6 to 9 months, something like that. And then you carry that out across 2 years. That's tough. That's really tough.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Nationals. specifically, did you do anything unique to prepare for this event in terms of your equipment, nutrition, race recon? There's so much to cover. Let's start with equipment. Did you do anything unique to prepare for the course?
Yeah, I did. I don't usually run heavy casing tires. I usually run exo casing Maxxis tires. And, cause I'm a big guy, but I'm a more of a finesse rider. I'm not a smasher. I don't smash into things. I like to kind of keep the bike light over the rough stuff if possible. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's unavoidable. And, so I run an aggressor out back and I switched from an exo to a double down for nationals because I was worried about popping it. I was not going to get a flat tire that was going to ruin my chances at potentially winning. There's just no way. It wasn't worth it to me. I thought, well, you know, I mean, I can roll a little faster on the lighter casing tire, but then I'm risking potentially having a flat. And then who knows, you know, with that, most likely not as good of a finish as if you didn't flat. So
smart choice. Yeah. What bike did you choose to ride and did you change anything else about the setup for the course? And I guess Nationals tends to be known for a course with some really rocky and nasty spots that can bite you. But at the same time, it's also a physical course, correct? Like a lot of pedaling that you have to do.
Oh yeah, definitely very pedally. On the bike selection, I actually have a Yeti SB130 lunch ride that I had just got built up from Salt Cycles. And then I have also Yeti SB150. And I really wasn't sure what bike I wanted to race at Winter Park for the Nationals. So went out there and after they had posted the course map of what all the stages were going to be like, I rode it on my 130 and I felt like I had enough bike. Now I felt like I could have benefited from the 150 in a few of the spots, but by and large, I felt like for me that I was going to be faster on the 130.
That's smart. Optimizing the choice for the majority of the course rather than those specific sections that would perhaps compose less of it.
Yeah. I just felt like that bike had a little better snap off of the corners. And I felt like that was going to benefit me, where maybe a different rider might have been faster on the 150. I just felt like for me, it was a better choice. And it worked out good.
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely. Yeah. It worked out well up on top of the podium. Did you do anything for the altitude? Living in Utah, you have access to high altitude and you live at a relatively high altitude as well. But did you do anything unique for the event?
Well, I did actually. There's some high elevation single tracks that we have around here that are pretty close to 10,000 feet. So I did train up there some. I do feel like I had an advantage from living at a higher elevation place with having the high elevation rides, you know, kind of under my belt already. I kind of knew what to expect with that. Because yeah, Winter Park, base elevation, 9,000 feet, man. People that come from sea level, it's a shocker to some of them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's you tough.
Get the bends coming up there.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, you do. So let's talk about the event itself, pre-riding. When you pre-ride a course, when you pre-rode Nationals, were you just running from top to bottom on the stages and figuring them out? Or were you stopping and looking at things? How do you approach pre-riding?
Oh man, what a great question. Yes, all of the above.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fortunately, there was plenty of time to ride the stages, with the exception of stage four, because stage four was the downhill race course. Okay.
Got it.
Yeah. So the rest of the stages, you could ride as much as you needed to, which was awesome. Stage four was a little tricky because it was the downhill race course, there was really limited access to it. And I really only got a handful of rides on it before the national event. It was interesting how that kind of played out. there was just a lot of pressure to get on the course. Yeah, I checked it out and I was able to get a couple more laps. And yes, I did kind of stop and look at one or two of the sections before just sending it. That's not really the way that I like to do it, especially as being a 51-year-old athlete racing enduro, which is mostly a younger person's discipline of racing. I have to be smart about it. It takes my body longer to heal when things go wrong. So I can't be a dummy about going out there and just sending it into oblivion. You know, I have to look. And if I look and I'm comfortable with it, I can go pretty fast. But if I am not comfortable with it, I'm going to slow down or I'm going to stop and check it out. You know, that's just,
that's
just how I do it for me.
That's smart. Yeah. In this process, are you worried at all about wasting too much energy for your race? How do you balance the energy from pre-riding, energy expenditure from pre-riding for the race?
Well, you've got to pre-ride. I think it's crazy to not pre-ride. I didn't pre-ride Fears, Tears, and Beers.
Yeah.
There's too much.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not really much access to that stuff other than, you know, human powered. And, you know, it's, it's a big day. So I kind of had to, that's the first time I've ever raced blind for an enduro. And I guess my results reflected that, but for nationals, there's plenty of time to pre-ride and plenty of time to check everything out. So yeah, you do it till you feel comfortable. I mean, if you're not comfortable with the course, what's the point? You know, I mean, you've got to be comfortable with the course. And so I did, I had enough to make me comfortable with everything. And then, I'm out at that point. I'm going to take some rest and then, just prepare for race day. So
what was your nutrition like the day of the race and maybe even the night before, if you were doing anything special with your nutrition?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I really have a sensible kind of whole food diet. I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. I eat a lot of chicken and pastas and rice and potatoes. You know, that's really what I eat. So I have a good balanced diet, getting those macros. And as far as fueling on the bike, for my kind of shorter events, I usually will just eat gels. If they're longer duration events, then I'll use the liquid fuel. So I use the hammer gels for the shorter ones, and then I use Perpetuum and maybe a combination of hammer gels with the, for the longer events that are more than 2 hours.
Sure. Yeah. So in this case, in the morning, what did you have prior to the morning of winning your national championship? What did you have for breakfast?
Oatmeal.
Oatmeal. Yep.
That's what I have every day. I mean, I don't really subscribe to changing up your diet for the day of. That's an interesting thing that a lot of cyclists do. And it's kind of a head scratcher. I mean, because they say, don't ever change up the way that you do things for race day. But a lot of people do that. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. Absolutely. Yep. They have a race breakfast that they don't eat except for race day. And you can learn a whole lot by experimenting outside of race day with that breakfast.
For me, it's just normal, what I normally do anyway. And that's what I did for race day.
What did you take on the bike for nutrition in this case, with, you know, the transfer stages allowing you time to eat? And certainly you don't eat anything during the stages.
Right.
The intensity is far too high.
Yeah.
But what did you bring with you on the bike?
Hammer gels. I just had the gels for nationals. It was kind of a shorter event. I think all my combined times for the stages were, I think, a little bit under 22 minutes, if I can remember correctly, for that day.
And how long was the day in total for you on the bike, including the transfer stages?
Well, we spent a lot of time waiting to drop stage 3. I probably spent about 20 minutes waiting to drop stage 1, which a lot of times, you know, it depends on what your category is. Pros go first and then they kind of work through the ranks. And since I'm in one of the older, even I'm Cat 1, it still takes a while to get back to us. So on certain races, you might be up there for over an hour waiting to go. So you kind of want to make sure you can stay loose and stay warmed up.
But how do you do that? That's got to be tough.
Well, I mean, you don't want to, it's kind of a balance because that's a great question. It's tough because every event is a little bit different with this type of racing. So if you can start later for your transfer to get up there, that's probably more ideal, to where you might be up there for 5 or 10, maybe even 15 minutes before you drop. If you wind up being up there for 30 minutes or longer, then I don't know, calisthenics, or I usually just ride my bike around a little bit to try and loosen up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe do tough. A couple of drills or something just to kind of try and get ready.
And even just get psychologically ready. That's sort of a big break, can be pretty tough, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you mentioned that I believe you had a crash in pre-riding or just leading up to the event. That ended up doing something to your ribs. You didn't know exactly. You probably didn't want to know what happened. So you had pain from that, pain in your ribs, which when you're doing enduro, it's jarring, extending, and doing all these things, plus breathing extremely hard and being at high elevation. Yeah. Worst case scenario for a broken rib or something like that. But did you have other setbacks at all that you focus, even if it's like a psychological setback where you took a wrong line or anything else? How did you rebound from those across the ebb and flow of the day?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what I did to my rib, but yeah, I did. When I was warming up on the day of the race, I could feel something in my side popping as I was warming up. I was like, oh boy, I had to just decide. I'm like, well, I got this. I'm going to push through this. And in fact, I took a little video of myself on the way up in the gondola to stage one. And I was like, it's going to be a good day, you know, and just keeping those positive thoughts in my head. Hey, you know, I'm going to do my best. I'm feeling okay. I feel good on the bike, you know, and yeah, I feel like that was helpful to just remain positive through that, even though it wasn't necessarily a positive thing to have a situation like that, you know, for a big race.
What crucial things did you do right that you feel like got you the national championship?
I believed in myself. I believed in my program. I believed that I was going to do good. I really feel like that was the key to all of it, was just, I had come up with my goal of winning, or not winning, but doing my best at this thing. My goal was actually a top five. So I thought, well, I believe this is a realistic goal, you know? And then at that point, I put together steps to get there. You know, I got a support team around me. You know, I did a resume and I got some sponsors. I got, you know, well, actually the first thing that I had to do is I had to talk with my wife about it and make sure that she was on board with it. Cause that's a key part of it, you know, is you have to have the support of your family. And she was excited about it. So she's like, yeah, let's do this, you know? And so then I started chipping away at the steps to get there. And, you know, I got on a program with Trainer Road. I just kept working the steps, and then I had to believe in the process, you know, really, I feel like that's the key. You have to believe that what you're doing is going to yield you the result of your goal, achieving your goal. And so, I do. For me, I feel like that's the key.
Awesome. Well, I mean, what did this feel like to accomplish it and to come out on top? The goal was a top five, but you ended up winning. What did that mean to you? I mean, once again, you aren't a young athlete in this sport, right? You're in your 50s. So it's not like this is like, career shift and now you're going to become a professional enduro racer, but that does not mean that it means any less to an athlete to accomplish something like this. So what did it mean to you?
Oh man, it meant everything. I mean, I was just super pumped. I still really have to pinch myself because this is just, these things don't come along that often, you know, and to actually have achieved this in my first attempt was just like, wow, you know, I cried. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
So I the day just went so well. I actually won 4 out of the 4 stages.
Wow.
So yeah. So when I had come across the finish line, there was an announcer there and she says, hey, you know, this Thornbickle, and he won all 4 of the stages. And I was just like in disbelief, but I was pumped, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah. you know, and so, but then a couple minutes later, when it kind of sunk in, the tears just started coming out, you know, and I had to go hide. I didn't want people seeing me crying, you know, because it was just such an emotional thing, just because I put so much into the training and just wanted it really bad. And so to actually have been able to achieve this was just a dream come true. And, you know, it was very emotional for me, Jonathan. Yeah, it was tremendous.
What a fantastic achievement. Thorne, you're a great example for all of us of setting a lofty goal and then breaking it down into achievable steps and then just sticking to that and believing in it. I'm motivated to recommit myself to all the goals that I have just based off of hearing your story. It's awesome. So, Thorne, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at thornbickle.com. Cool. Yeah. And if it's all right with you, I'd like to give a shout out to my sponsors.
Oh, please do. Yeah.
Yeah. Hammer Nutrition. These guys are amazing. If you go onto my Instagram and look at my profile page, you can get a reference code there. And if you go on and make an account with Hammer Nutrition, they'll give you 15% off on your first order.
That's cool.
Yep. Also, shout out to Deity Components, just beautifully crafted components and accessories. Check them out, deitycomponents.com. Salt Cycles. Yeah, I've already spoken about them a little bit. These guys are just amazing. Just a shout out to them. Thank you for everything. And last but not least, Suspension Syndicate. Thank you guys for everything that you've done for me. My suspension just works awesome. SuspensionSyndicate.com. They do all services and tuning on all brands of suspension, and they're an EXT USA dealer.
That's awesome. Fantastic. Yeah. Thanks so much, Thorne. Appreciate this and appreciate companies supporting athletes like you. I think it's awesome. So if you've listened to this and you want to share any success that you've achieved with Trainer Road, you can do so. And I'd love to hear from you. You can do just like Thorne did. You go to trainerroad.com/SAP, and then you can submit and share your story of how Trainer Road has helped you achieve some level of success. We'd love to hear it. Doesn't have to be a national championship. It can be anything that you deem worthy to share. And definitely it's worthy to share. So thanks everybody for listening. I hope to hear from you listeners about how Trainer Road's helped you. And Thorne, I'm excited to cheer you on at your next race. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.